Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. Welcome back. To Mama Mystery, I am your co-host, Austin, and here is your beautiful host, Kelly.
Hi, welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly, and it feels good to be back. We haven't been behind these mics in what feels like forever. I feel like I had to just brush the dust off. It's been quite a long break.
That's right.
Maybe we can have like a Mama Minute episode where we talk about what we've been up to in the last like month and a half.
Took Kelly to Cancun for her birthday.
Yes, we did that.
And been hanging out.
Yeah. I'm really excited to be back. I just had to take a break, a mental break. And you know, usually when I try to take a break, it only lasts a couple days, but this one lasted like a whole month and a half. And I was really nervous that I was going to not want to come back to this at all, but I am excited to be sitting here with you today talking about this episode.
Me too.
And who knows what the future holds? We're about to have baby number four. When we started this whole thing, we had two kids that were pretty self-sufficient. And then we had another kid who's now a toddler. And now we're having another kid.
Two under three.
And so it kind of just had me in my feels. Like, what am I doing? What am I doing?
But we're just busy. Doing? And mama comes first and then it's mystery. And so here we are just doing our best to put out some episodes for you people who enjoy us, yeah. Which is pretty cool.
I appreciate everyone who's been so patient and understanding. And it's very refreshing to make a post on Instagram and then see so many people resonate with it. And like leave sweet comments. It really does mean a lot to me. I wasn't even thinking about what the response would be truly. But then that was just a really pleasant surprise. So thank you. Okay. Are you ready for today's story, Austin?
Born ready, girl.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about before we get started? Austin has a cavity. Shout out to his dental hygienist, Miranda.
Oh yeah. Miranda rescheduled our appointments.
Yes.
And then told me I had a cavity because I've been eating trail mix at night and not brushing my teeth at night.
The funny few thing days is, a week. Is that you do brush your teeth, then you go and eat trail mix.
Right.
And then you come to bed. So you're kind of doing things out of order.
Needed an extra toothbrush in there.
The reason we're shouting out Miranda is because she was able to reschedule his appointment today and it all just happened to fall right into place.
Helped her, helped us.
Yes, because, okay, this is actually kind of a funny story. So, and this is a side note, if you're bored, just skip forward. So yesterday we were going to record, but yesterday was the only day we were going to have nice enough weather for me to mow our yard. And so we rescheduled to record today so that I could mow yesterday.
And we were able to reschedule because my appointment got moved.
Exactly. So shout out to Miranda because that's where this all really begins. But then I was mowing yesterday and I had to stop short because I accidentally ran over a rug.
So she took the mower and ran over a rug and it got the blades. It snapped a bolt off inside the mower and she couldn't continue mowing.
Yes. So we had this outdoor rug and I tried to power wash it the other day, hoping I could salvage this rug. It didn't work, but the rug was so heavy because it was so soaked with water that I just left it on the driveway to kind of air out. And then I was driving the mower yesterday, taking one of many bathroom breaks, and I like pulled up by the front, and then I thought I had enough room to get past the mower and between your truck. Past the rug, yeah. And I guess there must be some suction in that mower or something because it just like...
It pulls the grass up.
I guess I didn't really think about that. So
the blades go and they pull the grass up so then you can even cut.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Just in the moment, I was not thinking about that. I was like, yeah, I've got like a whole couple inches. It's not going to hurt anything. And then it was like... and just and then shut the mower off. And then we moved it. The blade fell off. The bolt broke. Like, so half of the bolt was still stuck inside the deck. This is not the first time I've had an issue with a mower. I accidentally ran a mower into a pond once because I was on a hill and it was very steep and the mower started sliding. And then I got up in hopes of, like, I don't know, shifting the weight. But when you stand up on a mower, it shuts it off, which is dumb, but also smart, but whatever. So it shut it off. So then I, like, hopped off the mower and tried to push against it as if I could stop, like, a 1,000-pound mower.
You hit a lamppost outside once.
Oh, I forgot about that. Why'd you have to bring that up? So, well, I texted.
You do the mowing, though, so I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. Is it worth it, though? That's the ultimate question. But I texted my brother and my dad, who love giving me shit for my mowing mishaps. And my dad said, you should get a job as a riding mower tester. If you can't break it, nobody can.
Hey, that's not a bad idea.
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my mower story. Now we're recording today, so.
So let's roll.
Yay. Today we are talking about Ezra McCandless. Oh man, this story is a doozy. I remember seeing clips about this story on TikTok because this girl was being tried for murder, spoiler alert, and she was like flirting with the people who were testifying on the stand. And it was really bizarre. She was
like
literally,
during court?
During the court. She was like making eyes at these guys that were having to testify in her court case. And I thought it was so bizarre. I hadn't really seen anything like that before.
Testify the right way and you get a blow.
Austin Reed.
Well, Casey Anthony did it.
Oh my God.
Didn't she do sexual favors for?
Well, that is your
cops.
This is, no.
Let's just keep going.
We're going to bump the brakes.
Okay. Just keep
redirect.
Going.
We'll talk about that some other time. My God, what a derailment. Okay. No, that
That's
is
why
not
I'm
what
here,
happened
folks.
Here. That's not what happened here. So moving on, Ezra McCandless was born as Monica Kay in Stanley, Wisconsin on October 6, 1998. Her mother, Rosalina, was only 14 years old at the time, and the biological father was not in the picture. So by the time Monica was 4 years old, her mother's new boyfriend and eventual husband decided to adopt her, and his name was Joe Shane Carlin. So then her name became Monica Carlin. So growing up, there was frequent fighting in the home, which made for a turbulent upbringing. By the time Monica was 12 years old, her parents, as she knew them, decided to split up. Her relationship with her mom was pretty strained, but she remained close to the man that she knew as her father, Joe Shane. So her relationship with her mom was tough because her mom was always very adamant about Monica not getting pregnant as a teenager. It's the worst thing you could possibly do. You will ruin your life if you get pregnant at 14, which has to be a little bit of a mind F to a kid who is the product of a teenage pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Like, so are you saying I ruined your life?
Right.
But ultimately, she was just saying this trying to protect her. But, you know, I think at any age or in any situation, when you have a child at 14, that's not conducive to a healthy mother-daughter relationship, at
right.
least early on. Maybe you can reconcile later. Sure, there's probably, you know, success stories out there. But come on, it's just not the best way.
This is one of those conversations where it's like asterisks all over the place because people will be like, well, no, that's not true. Listen, the far majority of people who get pregnant at 14 probably don't have as much financial wealth and success in life. They probably have a higher divorce rate and all those things.
They can't even legally drive.
Yeah. So now I'm sure there's lots of instances where it's been a blessing and worked out, but
those are
the majority are not fantastic.
Yeah. So she's off to a rough start, Monica. So anyway, in high school, Monica really struggled with her identity. She felt very masculine and felt like being characterized as a boy was more fitting to her personality. So she changed her name to Ezra McCandless, inspired by Chris McCandless from the book and movie Into the Wild, and then started using he, him pronouns. So if you don't know, Into the Wild is a nonfiction story about a guy who basically went off the grid because he didn't believe in the constitution of just government and the rigid structure of society, I guess. So he wanted to just go live in the woods. And then he did do that, but he accidentally ate poisonous mushrooms or something, some sort of poisonous plant, and ended up dying. But he journaled his entire journey, I guess, mm-hmm. and it was eventually found and then made into a book and then made into a movie. So,
because it got really big. I've never seen it, but I've heard of that.
Yeah, the movie's very good. So Ezra was known for her creativity and her proclivity for attention. She was an artist.
What is a proclivity?
Like a, she really loved it. She just fed off of it.
You got such good vocabulary.
Thanks. She was an artist, often using unorthodox objects as her canvas, such as the panels of her car, which was an early 2000s silver Chevy Impala. Literally, she wrote all over the hood of her car, the top of her car, the panels of her car, just all these like scribbles and drawings. Interesting, but definitely drew attention. So Ezra graduated from high school and went to college, but soon dropped out and moved back to Stanley to live with her mother. However, her mother was not about to just give her a free ride. She had to hold up her end of the bargain and either go to school or work. Well, tensions rose, and eventually Ezra decided to move out and move to Eau Claire, Wisconsin, which is about 36 minutes away. Ezra portrayed herself as this free spirit, starving artist, hipster character, and also loved letting anyone with ears know how she was victimized by her harsh and judgmental parents. Now, at some point, Ezra started getting back in tune with her feminine side and no longer presented with masculine pronouns, and to this day presents herself as female. So in watching her interviews, I just get the sense that Ezra is the type of person who desperately wants to portray herself as very smart and mysterious. And she wants you to ask about herself because she wants to talk about herself. But when she does talk about herself, she does it in a way that's very obviously inauthentic. And I don't know who to compare her to specifically, but everyone has known or come across somebody like this, like somebody who wants you to believe that they are the smartest, most interesting person in the room and will actively belittle you, but like in a super passive aggressive way. Okay, so there's actually a sketch on SNL that this type of persona reminds me of, mm-hmm. and it's with Will Ferrell and, oh my gosh, the girl that plays Debbie Downer. I can't think of her name, but he talks like this, and he's like a professor of blank.
Very blob, sophisticated.
And, just very pretentious and sophisticated, but like, this is the type of person that really wants you to think they are special and different and better than you, but in reality, they're just like
a person.
Yeah. They're just quirky. So anyway, while living in Eau Claire, she would couch surf and spend a ton of time at a coffee shop called Racy's, which is this very hipstery lounge with accessible Wi-Fi, which was perfect for her because she didn't have a cell phone. She had an iPhone, but it only, or I mean, not an iPhone, an iPod, but could only communicate with people if it was connected to Wi-Fi. And then she would just use messaging apps to communicate with her friend, like WhatsApp mm-hmm. is an app, I guess. So
probably doesn't have a cell phone because it's just harsh on the environment.
Yeah, or because she doesn't have a job and can't afford it.
Yes.
But we'll definitely say that it's because she wants to stay off the grid and just stay disconnected from the social structures that are just binding and suffocating. Okay, anyway, then one day in July of 2017, while she was lounging at Racy's, she met 33-year-old Jason Mengel, a medic in the Army Reserve who had popped into the coffee shop after unfortunately getting a flat tire nearby. So Ezra was there using the Wi-Fi, and the two just struck up conversation. And at the end of the night, the two exchanged contact info, and within 2 weeks, they were dating. In August of 2017, Ezra moved in with Jason and his roommate, Alex Zink. And despite their 15-ish year age gap and the fact that she was only about 18 at the time, they discussed getting married after only being together for less than a year. So I want to add that she never explicitly told Jason her age. She implied that she was in her early 20s. I don't know how she implied it without ever explicitly saying it, but he had clues to think, I think you're actually younger than you are. Like she had one of those graduation tassels hanging in her rear view mm-hmm. The first time that they met, but then the second time he got into her car, it was gone. So he couldn't actually like take a peek at the date that was on it.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that she definitely misrepresented herself, and this was a very calculated move on her part. So one night, Jason, Ezra, and a few of their friends went out to a bar called The Joint. And when they were there, someone caught Ezra's eye. There was a man sitting at the bar, feverishly writing in his notebook. And this piqued her curiosity, so she asked him what she was or what he was writing about. And she later said, I'm going to play a soundbite of how she described that night.
Well, he caught me right away because I thought it was quite a peculiar subject, cannibalism. And I was interested in what he meant, what I understood. He was speaking of it philosophically, and I also wanted his ideas and his concepts of literally cannibalism. So we talked back and forth about a few artists that have partaken in cannibalism that he mentioned. We spoke about the anxieties of and what it means for someone to consume another.
Cannibalism.
Yeah, you know, just regular coffee talk.
I read a long time ago that, I don't know when this was, I'm going to butcher this, I'm just making this up. Okay, butcher, not exactly a pun. Anyways,
my gosh.
I read a long time ago that there was somebody selling meat like in New York or something like 50, 70 years ago or something. And they were like becoming well known for it. And they found out it was humans and it tasted like a sweet pork.
Austin, we literally talked about this. We covered this case.
So crazy. Anyways, keep going.
It was Joe Metheny. It was episode 109. It wasn't even that long ago. It was, well, I guess it was October of 2022, but we talked about this story.
Crazy.
You were on that episode.
I don't remember.
It's because you're on your phone and you've got to start setting your phone down and listening and paying attention. All right. Anyway, so the guy that she was talking to about cannibalism was Alex Woodworth. So originally from Osceola, Wisconsin, Alex was working part-time at the coffee shop in Eau Claire when he met Ezra. But according to Alex's family, he had received his bachelor's in philosophy and biology and was planning to attend graduate school at the University of Oregon for his master's in philosophy. In addition to working part-time at Racy's, he also tutored on campus and taught a few philosophy classes at the local high school in Eau Claire, even starting up some book clubs that centered around philosophical teachings. His ultimate dream was to become a professor at the University of Oregon. So Ezra found herself drawn to Alex, and the two struck up a friendship. Also with Ezra's boyfriend, Jason, befriending Alex. So it was kind of like this little trio of friends, okay? So 3 months into Ezra and Jason's relationship, Ezra became pregnant, and we assume it's with Jason's child. She ultimately got an abortion, and it all very negatively affected her relationship with Jason. She actually got the abortion on her birthday. That's just how the appointment happened to land. But just to recap, they met in July, moved in with each other in August. She was pregnant by September and had an abortion early October.
Gosh, talk about a whirlwind of a year.
Yeah. After the abortion, Jason started pulling away and Ezra could really start feeling the tension. She told her friends that he constantly picked on her for minuscule things like losing pens or gaining weight or wearing her makeup in a ridiculous clown-like way. I mean, she is an artist, so she would always wear kind of heavy makeup. And she started to feel uncomfortable living with him, but knew that she couldn't afford to get a place of her own quite yet. One of the friends that she turned to for support was Alex Woodworth. Jason started spending more and more time away from home and away from the coffee shop, and he'd also have to travel a lot for work. So this allowed Ezra to spend even more time with Alex. Naturally, Ezra and Alex started falling for each other. Ezra says they bonded over their philosophical ideologies and often rooted back to Alex's interest in cannibalism. Cannibalism became seemingly this obsession, and Ezra later testified that many of their conversations revolved around this because cannibalism was the most intimate thing you could do, taking a person in wholly, consuming them. And it was a way for someone to live on even after they died if a piece of them existed in another living being.
Man, that is so freaking creepy. You have to be jacked in the head to think about this.
Mm-hmm.
To think about like, man, I'm going to eat that person.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of reminds me of Megan Fox and MGK, how they like consumed each other's
blood.
Yeah,
they're weirdos.
And they probably assumed that it was this cannibalistic way of forever entwining themselves into each other. So spiritual and romantic. So romantic. So Ezra said that as their relationship escalated, Alex introduced her to BDSM and that there would often be times where they would be having sex and Alex would be reading Danish philosophies during sex.
That's romantic.
Romantic. Austin and I do this thing where if something's like really actually the opposite of romantic, we just take the T out. So it's just romantic.
And I just say romantic every time I say it, but.
Because you're a hillbilly. I love you. You're so cute. You're the cutest hillbilly I've ever seen. I got to reel it back in. I'm getting mean.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Jason started to get suspicious of the way that Alex and Ezra are acting. Not only how Ezra acts with Alex, but how she acts with other male friends as well. But Ezra gaslit Jason into believing that there was nothing going on. This is just how she acts with her friends. She's just friendly and affectionate and touchy-feely. But real quick, before we get on with the rest of the episode, I want to take a moment to shout out today's sponsor, ZocDoc. So the other day I shared this really funny meme, or at least I thought it was funny, to my Instagram. And it was one of those screenshots of somebody responding to a tweet. And the original tweet said, "Little treat culture is getting out of hand. You don't need an $8 coffee because you did laundry." And the response was, "Sounds like someone could use a little treat." I thought that was so funny because I do have some friends who often treat themselves or they get regular pedicures. I wish I was the kind of girl that got regular pedicures. I just need to make that kind of time for myself. But one thing that I do to treat myself is take my healthcare seriously, which is why I'm so thankful that I found ZocDoc, a place where you can find and book tens of thousands of top-tier doctors, all with verified patient reviews. So don't settle. Go for the best. Find the right doctor for you. With ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you, and you can instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doctor you want, you can book them immediately so you don't have to wait awkwardly on hold with the receptionist. And these doctors all have verified reviews from actual real patients. So we're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. You can also filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition that you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. You can even score same-day appointments. That's crazy. I was trying to find a dermatologist a couple years ago, and I remember calling and trying to make an appointment, and they were like, "Yeah, she's 8 to 9 months booked out." My mind was blown. And the last thing I would want to do is find a suspicious looking mole and then hear that I have to wait 8 to 9 months to get it looked at. With ZocDoc, you can see a doctor within days. Go to ZocDoc.com/mystery and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/mystery. ZocDoc.com/mystery. Now let's get back to the story of Ezra McCandless. By the holidays, Ezra was balancing two full-blown relationships, but Alex was beginning to question why she wouldn't just leave Jason to be with him. He gave her an ultimatum, and when she didn't leave Jason, Alex slit his wrists. When Ezra heard about this, she asked Jason, a medic, to assist in helping Alex bandage his wrists. And then after this incident, Ezra still chose to stay with Jason. Then in February of 2018, Ezra started spending time with another man named John Hansen, a close friend of Jason's that he met while playing Dungeons & Dragons. She started an affair with John as well while she was still with Jason and Alex. So this is now a love square, not just a love triangle.
One woman, three dudes.
Correct. Sounds like a bad porno name. Like two girls, one cup. But have you ever seen that? Don't. It's terrible. Anyway, so that same...
You're on one.
That same month, Jason left for military training for a couple of weeks. And while he was away, Ezra moved out of his apartment and back in with her mother. Jason was really caught off guard by this. He didn't know why she was moving out. So when he came back from training, he still tried to keep in contact with Ezra. She was bouncing between homes, going from her mom's to her dad's to then a hotel that Jason offered to pay for. At this point, Jason's roommate and his girlfriend really didn't want Ezra to move back in. So Jason felt like the only way that he could help her was to pay for a hotel for her. So while they were at this hotel together, Ezra fell asleep and Jason went through Ezra's phone and discovered messages between her, his close friend John, as well as messages between Ezra and Alex. The messages between her and John were on February 11th of 2018 that said, "From Ezra, working out again really does make you want to fuck everything that moves." John said, "A body in motion wants to stay in motion." Ezra said, "Are you going to pound this anytime soon? Sorry, I'm rude." John said, "Not this week. I have Warren," his child. "It's all right to be blunt, just got to be all right with it coming back your way." From Ezra, "Just let me know when I get my next in and out. Also, hanging and doing art again would be nice because you're more than good dick." Ezra also said, "Oh, that should be nice. He's such a cool kid," talking about his son. John said, "Why, thank you. He is a good kid. I'm looking forward to spending some dad time with him." Ezra said, "That melts my heart. I'd love to paint with him sometime." Then the next day, February 12th, Ezra said, "Feeling like a snake today. What's wriggling in your mind?" John said, "I've been with Warren all day. My mind is pretty preoccupied." Ezra said, "That's understandable. Dad time." And then on Valentine's Day, 2 days later, Ezra said, "See something, say nothing, and drink to forget. Happy Valentine's Day." John said, "That's beautiful, Ezra. Happy Valentine's." Ezra said, "I have a way with words, John. Ha ha."
John seems disinterested.
I agree. Okay, I'm glad you picked up on that also because I was getting that sense as well. Mm-hmm. So Jason confronted Ezra about these messages, and Ezra's response after initially denying it was that John actually assaulted her a couple weeks prior to those messages. Ezra said or claimed that on the night of February 4th, a couple weeks prior to these messages, while Jason was away on military training, that Ezra was hanging out with John and his roommate. She alleged that they were all drinking and they were giving her shit for not being able to keep up with them. So she drank quite a bit and eventually got sick. So she said that John brought her upstairs to a bed. She assumed he was going to be taking care of her, but that when she woke up, she felt off, but couldn't remember what happened the night before. Then she said that he brought her home that morning and acted like nothing had happened. Ezra said when they arrived at the apartment, John asked if he could come in and use the bathroom, and that's where he assaulted her a second time on Jason's bed. So Jason called John and confronted him about the alleged assault and the messages that he read. At first, John also denied it, but when Jason said that Ezra was accusing him of raping her, he owned up to it, but said that Ezra was the one that came onto him. And then Jason thought about the way Ezra acted with Alex and confronted Alex at the coffee shop where Alex admitted they'd been having an affair for a while and were in love. So Jason goes back to Ezra and confronts her with all of this new information. And Ezra admitted that she and Alex had had a relationship, but that it was all Jason's fault because he pushed her away after that abortion. Which is just level expert gaslighting to be like, "Well, you left me no choice. You were cold to me. You were mean to me. You pushed me away, so I fell into the arms of another man." But she still claimed that the incident with John was rape. So Jason basically at that point just waved his white flag and surrender and said, "Okay, well, if that's really what happened, you should at least go to the police and report it so that there are consequences and that if it happens again, there's record of it." So she did. Ezra went to the police and filed a false report claiming that John raped her on the night of February 4th and the morning of February 5th. But thankfully, he had a copy of those messages as well that showed her being interested in him, asking for more, asking when they were going to hook up again. And so those messages basically relieved him and the case was closed. So Ezra texted Alex and told him to never talk to her again as she tried to rebuild her relationship with Jason. She was still in Stanley while she continued talking with Jason, telling him she was going to therapy and that she was really working on herself, But one night at a bar, Jason learned some more disturbing details about her relationship with Alex, and he had just had enough. He'd heard enough. He'd had enough. And he realized Ezra was playing everyone and playing with men's emotions, his friend's emotions. So he told her, "We are done." At that point, Ezra then wrote him a letter and asked a friend to deliver the letter to Jason for her. On March 22nd, 2018, Jason called Ezra just to check in on her and make sure she was doing okay, even though he still did not want to be with her. He just wanted to make sure she was all right. They discussed their plans for the evening, and Ezra said that she planned on staying at her dad's in Stanley because her plates on her car were expired and she didn't want to risk getting pulled over. So Jason said he was going to go do some laundry and then head to Racy's later on. So later that day, Jason was at Racy's coffee shop and was surprised to see Ezra pull up. While Jason sat outside with a few of the regulars, Ezra walked into the shop, ordered a coffee, and tipped the barista, which was something that she never did. It was very unusual for her to go in, order coffee, pay for it by herself, and tip, because Jason always, always paid for her. She never paid for herself. She kind of mooched off of Jason and whoever else would provide for her. The barista also noticed that Ezra just seemed off, like her appearance was disheveled. She didn't have any makeup on, which was totally unlike her. But she said that she was there to meet up with a guy named Matt, who she was going to be trading some art with. Matt and Ezra left the coffee shop together, and Jason noticed that Ezra seemed really agitated when she left. And Jason remembered that Ezra did say she made multiple copies of the letter that she gave him with the intent to give John and Alex copies of the letter too. And she had also mentioned that when she planned on confronting Alex, she wanted to punch him in the face and chastise him for not being a better friend to Jason. Like, she's blaming Alex, the friend, for having an affair with Jason's girlfriend, but the girlfriend is you. So, like, the delusion just runs really deep with this one. So with all of this in mind, Jason's concerns grew, and he chose to follow Ezra. He rode his bike to Alex's house, and sure enough, Ezra's car was parked in his driveway. So he waited outside, even going up to the door, trying to listen in through the front door. And a neighbor actually witnessed this and called the police on Jason because his behavior was odd. So while Jason was standing outside the door, his phone went off and he received a text message. And his text alert was very unique. And Ezra inside heard it and knew that he was outside. So she yelled, "Just let him help you." So Jason, thinking something's wrong, like maybe Alex has hurt himself again, he busts into the house, runs upstairs, and found the two of them just talking. And Alex told Jason everything was fine, they're just talking. But Jason suggested maybe they should go somewhere more public just in case things escalate further and things do get out of hand. So at this point, police show up because of that call about Jason, and Jason reassured them about what was going on. While he was talking with officers, Alex and Ezra walked out towards Ezra's car, and the police asked them if they were all right. They said, "Yeah, we're good," and then everyone dispersed. The police left, Jason left on his bike, and then Ezra and Alex left in Ezra's car with Ezra in the driver's seat. Later that evening, Jason tried texting Ezra, but since she didn't have any Wi-Fi, she didn't receive the messages, nor did she respond. And here is Ezra's account of what happened next with Alex.
What we had started talking about is, like, feelings towards the relationship we had had. And he started to now speak about how he felt about my relationship with Jason and how he felt about our relationship ending. I started feeling anxious after our conversation being abruptly interrupted. And now we were driving and talking about me and Jason and things like that, I started to feel anxious, just uneasy. As a result of my anxiety, I asked him if it'd be all right if he could drive for a while. The conversation was more led by him at this point, and he was voicing his opinion about my continuation of the relationship with Jason. When he stopped the car, We sat there for a moment, and a car passed us. Not much happened.
So you're in the mud, You're stuck.
Yes.
What is Alex doing to try to help you get unstuck?
At that point, he was very quiet. He wasn't doing really much. He kind of stepped back, and he seemed like he was just letting me look and try to figure this out.
I know there's some pictures shown that there's a couple of knives back in the trunk.
Yes.
Were you aware those were in there?
Not consciously, no.
Do you know how they got in the back of your trunk?
There's always various knives from moving place to place between my mom's and my dad's, and from there was a lot of things in my trunk from moving out of my apartment. So they somewhere between moves.
Was one of those knives something Jason had given you?
Yes.
We also saw a picture of what looked like a steak knife or a kitchen knife.
Yes.
Did you know that was in there?
I didn't know that was in there, no.
Did you take those knives out at any time?
No.
Did you go into your center console to try and get anything to move the car?
No, I didn't really look in there.
After not finding anything to move the car,
yes.
What were you going to do next?
Breathe. I was like, oh great. I don't know where I am. I have no idea. I'm stuck in the mud. I don't know what to do. Just, I need to breathe. I went over to the hitch of the trailer, and I decided to sit on it, and I was just trying to breathe through the anxiety and the feelings of being stuck, not knowing where I am, and I was just kind of looking out into the woods, sitting on this hitch of sorts. As I was sitting there, he approached me from behind, and he wrapped his arms around me. It was kind of a hug. He held me there for a little while. I kind of tensed. I didn't really reciprocate the hug. And it was kind of a silent moment between us, but I felt awkward and uneasy, and it wasn't a time for me to feel like I wanted a hug, I guess.
And let me ask you something else. Do you know whether or not Alex had a phone with him?
Yes.
Did you have a working phone with you?
No.
You had your iPod, I gather.
Yes.
And the phone without the minutes?
Yes.
All right. Did you ask Alex at any point to make a phone call on his phone to try and get a tow truck?
No.
All right. You could handle it, but you hadn't been able to move the car. What are you thinking when you're saying, I can handle this?
What I'm thinking is, I don't want to get my car towed because of how expensive it is. He suggested that I might want to lay down for a while and maybe just relax. I just shrugged and was like, all right, maybe. And I decided to walk back towards the car.
So just to recap, they've gotten this car stuck in the mud on this desolate kind of side road. And they happen to be right next to this green trailer. It's like a flatbed trailer, and it's just right next to them. So when she refers to the hitch of the trailer, I'll put a picture on her Instagram to give you a better visual. But Ezra's car is just parked parallel to this trailer.
And she has knives in the back of her car because that's normal.
Yeah.
Lots of knives.
Yeah. Like, who doesn't just have knives? And there's no explanation of how the knives ended up outside of the trunk or in the trunk. The knives just magically appeared. So she says that while she was laying in the back of the car, Alex positioned himself on top of her and started talking about Ezra in the third person, saying things like, Ezra is the sun. Ezra is a shining light. And as he's coming on to her, she said that he then removed her glasses so that she couldn't see very clearly and then just blindfolded her altogether. And this was something that they did in the past when they were having their sexual relationship. There was a lot of BDSM involved. So then he starts talking about what he deserves and what he's going to take. And she started to fear that he was going to kill her, probably consume part of her, and then kill himself. So she starts trying to get away and knees him in the groin in an effort to escape. And then she somehow managed to get the knife away from Alex and then started stabbing him in self-defense. Ezra alleged that during this attack, while she was actively stabbing him, that he grabbed her by the neck and then moved his hand around to the back of her head, gripping her hair and pulling some of her hair out. And she says she then stabbed him in the head, but he still managed to get out of the car. And then she talks about how he got out of the car and then looked like he was trying to use the bathroom. And so she went over there to try and help him because her first instinct is just always to help somebody first. I mean, even though she's just been brutally attacked and she has stabbed this guy, she's like, yeah, I'm going to help you go to the bathroom.
Bullshit.
I mean, it's like such
a stupid story. Listen, you've done an incredible job writing this. I've had a hard time following this whole episode. I've had a hard time staying attentive to it. And listen, we're all weird in our own ways. All right. These are freaking weirdos. And they're talking about cannibalism and they call each other the sun and say all this dumb shit. And they have these hardcore shit they do and multiple boyfriends and it's all drama. And these are like the type of people in the world that I wish didn't exist. And I like stay far, far away from out of my life. So like, as you've been talking, I'm like, okay. I started thinking about something else. I'm like, wait, like focus. Okay. Back to this person who's talking about eating this person and calling each other the sun. And then I get drift off into something else. And I'm like, wait, back to what I'm doing here. I'm the podcast.
I think what you're describing is ADD.
Yeah, but it's ADD because these are people I want nothing to do with.
I get it. But I mean,
like, I never want anything to do with people, but normally it's like, oh, here's a story of a guy who had a rogue childhood and now he went rogue and okay, there you go. This is like these people who are sitting around connecting constellations and figuring out the meaning and talking about wanting to fucking eat each other.
No, I totally get it because these are the type of people too that just so happened to bully me in high school. So
Really? When
I was in high school, it was always the pretentious artsy ones that bullied the shit out of me because they thought that I had this perfect life because I was the blonde cheerleader. And like behind the scenes, they never knew what I was dealing with at home, which was actually a lot. And it's always the same people, though, that bullied me, were these people who thought they were so much smarter and looked down on me like I was an idiot. And the people that were like that are the Ezras. The Ezra. Mm-hmm. So, like, I have almost
I'm
this
sure
personal
there's
tie
people
to this. Well, sure, yeah. Not all artsy people are assholes.
That's not what we're getting at here.
No, but there was a consistent pattern with the people who treated me like shit in high school and in college. And it was always these people who thought they were better than everyone. But it was more so because they didn't know who they were. So they created this fallacy of being this really smart and intelligent and interesting person. But in reality,
roots from insecurity.
Yes.
Deep insecurity. And so they create their own planet with their own rules where it's like, oh yeah, what we do is we talk about eating each other and refer to each other. And it's like, I don't know. It's just like, man,
so
enough about Ezra.
Well, here's the thing, because I am going to be wrapping up. So in total, Ezra stabbed Alex 16 times in the head, neck, torso, and groin.
Psycho.
Then at 4:15 that afternoon, dairy farmer Don Sipple heard a knock on the door. And when he opened the door, he was horrified by what stood before him. This woman who was muddy and bloody and just in this total daze with the word boy freshly carved into her forearm. She said she didn't know where she was, how she got there, what happened, or even what her own name was. So he immediately calls 911 and this mystery woman is rushed to the hospital. At the hospital, police are asking her questions and she's feigning amnesia. She can't remember her own name, but somehow knows to ask for Jason Mangle. And what she doesn't realize is that at this point, they already know a lot of the answers to the questions that they're asking her. They've already found this person's vehicle, and more disturbingly, inside the vehicle, they have found a dead body. And as she starts to recall the attack, she starts rattling off this confusing story, nonsensical story, about the attack starting in the vehicle, ending outside of the vehicle, but then somehow his body ends up back inside the vehicle. Like, none of it makes any sense. She didn't have any defensive wounds, and the marks that she did have on her body were superficial. And then the physical evidence was not lining up with her version of events, and her version of events changed multiple times. She first stated that the attack took place at a different place, like a totally different park, likely to distract away from the actual crime scene. And then she also stated that she took Alex's phone, but accidentally dropped it. Yet when they found the phone was smashed, like demolished on purpose, with way more damage than just a simple drop would have caused. And when they asked her how the word boy could have been carved into her the way that it was, she finally admitted that she had actually done that herself. And with that one admission, everything else, this dramatic narrative that Ezra created in her mind and spewed out, despite the damage it was going to cause to so many people, finally started to fall apart. Prosecutors believed that Ezra lured Alex out to this muddy, desolate road, attacked him, and then tried to drive away, but got stuck in the mud. So she had to come up with this scenario where she was ultimately the victim, something that she's done in the past. All of this was in an attempt to keep Jason in her life and keep Alex from revealing the truth about their relationship and how deep it actually got. Without Jason in Ezra's life, she had no place to live, no money, and no security. But with Alex out of the way, maybe she could still salvage what was left with Jason. Ezra was ultimately arrested just 2 weeks after the murder. She was charged with first-degree intentional homicide and use of a dangerous weapon. At first, she tried to plead not guilty by reason of insanity, but then later withdrew that plea, claiming that she did this all in self-defense. Throughout her trial, she really tried to portray herself as this dainty, fragile, cultured, and intelligent victim. She literally batted her eyes at Jason. I will put the video on our Instagram so you can see for yourself how she presents herself during the trial in front of Jason. It is so unnerving. But she's like trying to hold back smiles. She's wearing a pink blazer and this flowery shirt because, like, how could a fragile little dainty girl commit a murder? But it was wild. It was all over social media, this performance that she put on as this curious, mysterious intellectual who couldn't even read words on the screen. They were having her read like excerpts during the trial, and she couldn't read the word facsimile or phenomenology.
Oh,
she
man, really... I can't read the word facsimile. Didn't know that was how that was said.
How did you think it was said?
Fast smile? facsimile? I don't know. I see it all the time because in the sports hobby world, something will be a facsimile autograph. It's facsimile?
A facsimile?
That's a facsimile.
Like a fax.
No, I think I said a facsimile. That's what I used to say.
It's like
facsimile. Got it.
But the difference, Austin, is that you don't try to portray yourself as this highly intelligent, smarter than everyone in the room. You
are just a regular dude.
And that is the difference
I think
between
I say
you and Ezra.
Facsimile is, oh, that's the only difference. Yeah, because I'm a cannibalist, whatever.
Well, hold on, because I don't think that, I do think that Alex had interest in cannibalism because he kept a journal and there were a lot of excerpts from his journal that talked about cannibalism and his deep philosophical beliefs. But I don't necessarily believe that he was abusive towards Ezra and that everything she claimed was actually true. I think Alex, unfortunately, got a really bad rap because he's not alive to defend himself. So I don't believe what Ezra said about Alex. I believe what his family says about Alex.
Do you think the human body can break down human protein like a carnivore, like it would other meat?
Like if you were eating beef?
Yeah, like if you grilled a bicep, would your body digest that like it would a steak?
I don't know. I don't want to think about it. It's not something I want to think about.
I'll
Why
Google
don't you
it.
Write Ezra a mail letter? You guys can be prison pen pals, see what her thoughts are on it. So anyway, the jury did not buy any of her act. They found her guilty of murder. She seemed shocked by this verdict. And she was sentenced to life in prison with eligibility for parole after 50 years. She has tried to appeal multiple times, but has been denied. While she's been in prison, she has created and sold art that she's selling through Instagram.
What?
I don't know how this is working. I think someone must be running the Instagram for her. The Instagram page is dirt_fiend, F-I-E-N-D. And as recently as December of 2023, she posted a reel to this Instagram with pictures of herself in her prison jumpsuit side by side with a mystery man with dark hair, a dark beard, and dark rimmed glasses. You know, presumably just another dark and twisty, tortured artist, hipster, barista.
I don't know what to say to that.
And that's it. That's where we are. I don't know what Jason's up to. I assume he probably wants to just forget all of this ever happened. During his testimony during the trial, he said that he really repressed a lot of this because he wanted to just remove himself from it. It was a very dark time during his life. So can't blame him for feeling that way.
No doubt. What a loon.
Crazy, crazy. These types, like these sociopathic types like Jodi Arias And Amber Heard, she kind of like resembles Amber Heard too. And just the way that she's like so dramatic and you're like, I know you're not being authentic, but I can't quite put my finger on it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, these type of people intrigue me because I just think like, do you think I'm so stupid that I can't see through it?
Yeah, I can't stand them. I can't stand like people who are lying to you and it's obvious.
Yeah.
Like, well, dude, I'm not an idiot. You're lying to me.
Yeah.
You don't have to lie to me. You just tell me.
Yeah. It's like talking to your child.
I don't care if it's like, you know, this type of crazy stuff or like something simple. Like I had an employee that called in and they said that they couldn't come in and gave me this huge elaborate bullshit reason. And I'm like, listen, you're a high schooler. There's plans tonight. That's the reality of this situation. And they're like, no, really, it's this whole story. And then they texted another employee asking them to cover. And they said how there was a dinner with all her friends and she didn't want to miss it. And I'm like, I'm not an idiot. You're in high school. It's Friday night or whatever it is. You don't want to go to work. Like, don't give me this big elaborate bullshit story.
Yeah.
That stuff drives me crazy.
Yeah.
I'd rather you just say, hey, I have some friends that I want to hang out with real bad tonight, and I want to make a real immature decision and miss work. And then I'll consider it. But like,
because you've done that.
Yeah, I used to do it. I worked at Olive Garden for 2 weeks, and then the jamboree was that night, and they had me scheduled. Now, caveat, okay, they scheduled me for 40 hours a week, 2 weeks in a row, and I was in high school. And I was like, hey, I said I wanted 10 to 15 hours a week, and they were scheduling me for like 30 to 40. So yeah, the jamboree was happening. I'm not going to freaking Olive Garden to work when I don't want this many hours and the jamboree's going on. So I know what it's like,
yeah.
But you don't need to give me some big bullshit story like you're a drug addict.
Right. And as if also there aren't literally surveillance videos inside most of the places where you work and you're able to see somebody like actively lying when they say they're somewhere else, but they're actually there. It's weird because that's happened before too. And it's just like, what do you get out of lying so much?
Yeah.
Just tell me the truth.
So weird. Anyway,
don't lie and good don't job, kill Kelly. People.
Yeah.
And don't eat people and stay while we're at it.
And stay in school. Mama, mystery, out.
Bye.